This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
By the way, on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's Thursday, which means we get a visit from the big guy. Tall, powerful left-hander. We always talk about crafty lefties. Brock's a fireballer. He's a fireballer of a left-hander. He joins us now for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Rock. How are you now?
Well, good morning, Polly. I'm doing pretty well. We had a, how about those winds, man? How crazy, crazy winds. And I'm sorry for the professor with the power being out. And my parents checked in with them. They were out for about 16 hours. But kudos to the power companies and everybody getting everyone up and running. And glad that the JC's got the power back on.
Quick windstorm story. Do we have time?
Yeah.
Would have been your freshman year in college.
Oh, I remember this sucker. Yes.
Windstorm 95. Ooh. happened during finals week at the University of Washington. I had completed my last final the day that the windstorm happened. Two things happened at the residence. I was living with seven dudes in a house up on 15th Avenue across from the reservoir. The first thing that happened is that I saran wrapped the lower floor toilet in that house after the power had all gone out, which Matt Taunton did not appreciate.
Nope.
Still one of my better pranks. The second thing was that we hooked up sails to skateboards. So we were holding up bed sheets that we were standing on and created like ad hoc windsurfers that we were able to cruise up and down 15th Avenue on until a police officer saw us and encouraged us to go inside. So that's my favorite windstorm story.
Well done. Well done. Yeah, nobody got hurt on the homemade windsurfing tools, huh?
Hurt's a relative term. No one was injured.
People got hurt. No one was injured. I got you. Okay.
Yeah. Right. There was some, and it also there was because I was still early in my research into the effects on alcohol upon my life. So that was anesthetizing. I was anesthetized.
I have a question, really quick one. Are windstorms a regular thing here?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's the Pacific Ocean that's out there. You see that, the Puget Sound?
And
yeah.
It depends
just not
a little bit
fresh
on,
water.
Yeah, it depends a little bit on Nino or Nanya and and the Hawaiian Express and the Pineapple Express and how fierce they come. So there you go.
All right.
Is there a more misnamed phenomenon than El Nino? Like it comes in and just messes everything up and it's the child. Here comes the child. Like, no, that's a terrible name for it.
Question one, Brock. Of Russell's struggles and the factors that may have contributed to them down the stretch of this past season, which issue is most fixable and which issue is least fixable?
Whew, that is a good question. You know, I went back last night, and in the midst of some of the winds and roaring storm, I went back and actually watched the coaches' tape. I watched, obviously, the game Saturday. I parsed through it enough on Sunday, but Salky is back in town and we're going to do our podcast today. So I thought I'd just kind of refresh myself and watch that. And man alive, was it painful, painful, painful. So many opportunities, by the way, so many opportunities on offense, so many opportunities on defense, even a couple opportunities punting the ball to pin them back. And obviously the fumble at the end. And oh my gosh, was that a really hard tape to watch. The most correctable is for Russell to get the ball out of his hands. And I saw our boy C. Raj tweeting out about the number of times that Russell has been sacked in 9 years. And if he plays 20, like Brett Favre, he'd be like at 800 and some sacks, which would be 300 more than Brett Favre had, who has the NFL record of being sacked 525 times. Of those 45 or so sacks a year that Russell has had, you know, whoever this new coordinator is going to be, I think you have to have a legitimate sit down and say, man, we need to keep protecting yourself. You know, even in that game with the number of the sacks, just get the ball out. Just throw it away. Watch the 43 and 42-year-old play this weekend. Watch them. And by the way, did you guys see the tweet that Brady sent out about
yes.
History Channel?
History Channel.
When I first looked at that, I thought it was Jim Moore and Dave Ross. So as I'm finishing up here, Danny, you can pull it up and look at it quickly. And I was like, what is Dave Ross and in a bearded Jim Moore doing? Are they doing some show together? But you watch those two guys, man. They get the ball out of their hands. Do they get hit a little bit? Sure. But, man, they are a lot of checkdowns. I think I told you guys this on Monday, that when the Jets beat the Rams, Adam Gase's whole plan for Sam Darnold was don't get killed and get the ball out. And we're going to have an out for you on every single play. And getting those outs, Paul, and getting those checkdowns and getting those completions, even though he still has a really high completion percentage, that thing can be north of 70 easily if there are more checkdowns in play. So I think in time, Father Time is going to do that to him anyway, because some of the burst and legs and explosion is going to continue to diminish with age. But I think that is the most correctable, those sack numbers that are just off the charts.
A very wise man once said life is about trade-offs, Brock.
Yes, he did. I saw him over Christmas break. That would be one Lawrence Hills,
right.
My father-in-law.
Brock's father-in-law is very, very wise with that. One of the trade-offs with Russ is you're going to have more sacks because
yep.
he runs around.
Yep.
And that's – so I get – and I saw C. Raj's stat, which is good, and it points to it. The part that – is when people said, when are they going to finally invest in the offensive line? And that's the part where I kind of roll my... It's not an apples to apples. Part of this, no. And it's not all of it, part of it is the way Russ plays.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and, you know, his guards weren't good enough. I mean, Ipadi in that game was atrocious. Jordan Simmons was really bad. Posick couldn't block. You know, the holding calls were just killers. They killed those drives.
Yep.
The Rams, watch them this weekend against the Packers. If the Rams get the Packers in 3rd and 7+, they're going to win. If they get them there consistently, they are going to win the game. They are number one in the league with a bullet. It is not even close. When you're in 3rd and 7+, because that's when they rush 4, and they have 7 guys to cover your 3 or 4 in routes, and 7-on-4 wins, and they are the most dominant team in that category. And going back and watching that again last night and seeing just that's a dead drive, that's a dead drive, that's a dead drive, that's a dead drive. Because of those holding calls, which again is somewhat to do with Russell running around,
a little bit,
ending plays, creating it makes it more difficult on those linemen, and you know. But at the same time, it's a cost analysis. Hey, man, the touchdown to DK happens.
Yep.
Why? Because he extends the play and he makes those things happen, and that is always going to be the case for really just creative quarterbacks like Russell.
Life's about trade-offs. Question two. The 360 has pointed out very validly that if I think El Nino is an inappropriate name, I must not have children. Fair. Very, very fair critique. Brock, I'm going to read you what most accurately describes Russell Wilson's 2020 season. This is a poll I put up. The 4 options that I gave were, it was just a second half slump. Like, it's not any more complicated than he just didn't play his best. He hit his ceiling. Hamstrung by head coach. Pete got too freaked out by the turnovers and said, no more. Hamstrung by the OC. Of those 4, and it's overly simplified, which do you think is most accurate?
Yeah, I think it's the head coach.
Ooh.
Who then fires the coordinator.
Yeah.
I think that was the decision that he made to win games, Danny. You know, I would probably put one on there that says, just play to win. You're just playing to win. And Pete was just playing to win. And we're going to beat up Carson Wentz, and we're going to beat up C.J. Beathard, and we're going to beat up, Jared Goff, and we're going to beat up Cole McCoy, and we're going to beat up Sam Darnold, and you know we're going to be able to just play to win these games without you having to make 10 plays a game and force the ball and push the envelope and maybe live on that dangerous side of turning the ball over. So of yours, I would say that was a head coach's decision. He's basically said as much over the preceding days, and he let go of his coordinator. So if I'm voting in that poll, that's how I answer it. You? What was the populace?
Ooh, the populace. It was a good poll, Brock. Like you're familiar with the big. It was each of them had at least 10%. 35.
I've been known to be an excellent poller, Danny. I mean,
yes,
you're
great.
Through my years on Twitter. Yeah.
Yes, 35.4% said just a second half slump. 13.6% said hit his ceiling. Hamstrung by head coach was 26.2. Hamstrung by OC was 24.9. So none of them, no majority. I was on hit his ceiling.
Yeah.
I think that when you put that much on Russ, I think when you ask that much to flow through Russ,
yep.
I think things tend to cave in around
him. How dare you question him?
No, I think it happens.
I think that's probably my second answer, you know, because I can't say a second half slump. No. You know, I mean, the stretch, were those turnovers all in the second half?
They were. It was pretty much, it started a little bit before the second half, but it was.
The Buffalo game?
Buffalo game is game 8. Los Angeles game is game 9.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, so I would probably put, I'd put the head coach's decision making, and then I would put the quarterback as, I mean, now having said that, I think he still threw 40 touchdowns.
He's awesome.
This year,
it's not a sense of like, hey, he wasn't good enough and he's not going to be good enough. I think he needs a strong run game. I think he's different than Mahomes.
I think
he needs a strong run game.
I do. I have believed that from day one, Danny, when they drafted him. I think that is why he beat out Matt Flynn and Tavares Jackson and those guys, because you could complement his skill set of movement and creativity and throwing it down the field with a run game. It is why at the time he shattered the all-time collegiate pass efficiency record at Wisconsin. That Brett Bielema said, if I had this guy for 4 years, he would own and we would own every offensive record in the history of college football. And I believe that because he is best suited, most equipped, most gifted off of that run game. And, you know, I don't think that should be offensive. I don't think every quarterback is created equally. Look at the 8 that are remaining standing. And as I said, Jim Moore and Dave Ross that are still in it.
I will say this. Do you like how I've gotten all indignant and dogmatic about it? Like I don't own a Let Russ Cook t-shirt?
Danny, you're just a...
I'm a fly in the ointment. I'm a monkey in the wrench.
You're just a beautiful enigma at times. Awesome.
Question 3. We've been sifting through, Brock, a lot of the national talking heads and their takes on what's the deal with Russell Wilson. Rodney Harrison of NBC had an interesting theory as to Russell Wilson and if his style gels with the playoffs.
You know why Russell Wilson is a problem? Because he needs discipline. He does whatever he wants. He drops back and this is what their offense is about. Drop back, run around, and try to find someone deep. No, that doesn't work in the playoffs. That doesn't work all the time. Yeah, it can work, and, you know, you can make a lot of big plays during the regular season, but when you come to the playoffs and you're trying to win a championship, that type of offense is not going to work. And you saw Seattle get exposed this last month.
That's 2-time Super Bowl champion Rodney Harrison.
Yeah.
Brock, what do you think about that take?
Yeah, I would just disagree with that. I think the Rams had a lot to do with that. I think the 49ers had a lot to do with that. I think when you're playing, you know, just elite defenses and those in your division that know you, they make it difficult. I mean, Russell wants to play on time. You know, he wants to get the ball out. But his clock, man, was as messed up as I have ever seen it in rewatching that coach's tape. You know, and it started in the first 2 series where he did nothing, you know, wrong. There's nothing more that he could do, and he's just getting smacked in the face, and they can't block him. And even on a simple swing route, you got people that just – and I think that was absolutely Brandon Staley's plan is, hey, man, we're going to get this guy from the beginning his clock screwy. I got this big, stupid clock in our great room that continues to break down, and it ticks me off because it's impossible to get on and off the wall and everything else. And that's, you know, unfortunately, against these teams and against the Rams in particular, that's Russell, man. His clock, because of their group up front, gets all out of whack. So then, you know, the completions that are normally there, you know, the little check down to Hollister, the little pivot route to Disley, those things that should be gimmies, even those were just forced and out of whack and out of rhythm. So I think it had a ton more to do. I mean, we've seen Russell in a lot of playoff games. We have seen him have perfect passer ratings in playoff games against the Panthers. We've seen him, you know, be able to play incredibly efficient on-time ball in playoff games over the years. Just not against these Rams. And you know, I was telling Dory this the other day, man, it's just a matchup. Like basketball. We hear basketball all the time. That's just a bad matchup. And right now, with your personnel and with Russell, those Rams, unfortunately, are a bad matchup.
I think Rodney's right if it's from this regard. If you're asking everything to go through Russ, then I think Rodney's right and he needs more discipline. I think that the way that you get the most out of Russell is by giving him the latitude to be able to play off script. I don't think you want to eliminate that from his game because I think it's one of the things he does best. So build it out with a strong run game. So it's not entirely dependent. And it, if things are hard for him and it's not working for Russ, that you got something else that you feel good about in your arsenal.
I mean, again, we'll watch, what, 8 different quarterbacks do it this weekend, all do it a little bit differently. Drew Brees has to have underneath passing outlets. He has to. I mean, in order to operate and play his game, he's got to get to 25 kind of check downs and throws underneath 5 yards. And that's the way that he's got to play. If you ask Drew Brees to push the ball down the field, if you ask Drew Brees to throw deep play action shots, if you ask Drew Brees to play with no run game and no underneath passing game, he couldn't function. Tom Brady has to have protection. He has to. His five have to be able to block four or they're going to lose. And in the 2 games against the Saints this year, when his front could not block them, they lost. And if they can't do it this weekend, they're going to lose again. We can go through this list of Lamar Jackson, all the different guys, even Patrick Mahomes, by the way, who, as I said to you guys earlier in the week, man, the last 7 games he's played have been 1-score wins. We know how thin that line is. And, you know, when you're playing all 1-score games, man, there could be 3 or 4 plays this weekend that just bump those guys right out of it if they don't make them. So in their 1-score games, because he's getting hit, because his O-line is missing 2 starters, because Clyde Edwards-Helaire and his productivity went off the cliff and they couldn't run the football. So, yeah, it'll be a fun weekend to discuss and watch all these QBs and certainly some conversation with Russ that isn't going anywhere.
Brock, we love talking to you. I hope you stay warm and outside of the vortex of the swirling winds.
Will do, Danny. Will do. There'll be no homemade
windsurfing.
Kite windsurfing apparatus here for me. None of that.
I like thinking of Danny as like Bodie from Point Break. Yeah, man. Vaya con Dios. Just going to ride this wind.
Brock, we'll talk to you soon.
Be well, boys. See ya.
That is Brock Heward from talking to us from Blue 42. He's with us on Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It wasn't certainly the safest thing to be doing, but yeah, it was swirling winds. It's the middle of finals. It was anybody who lived in this city during that time will remember Windstorm 95.
That's something else that this is a regular occurrence, and I guess it's something that I need to be aware of. When I was going to school at Syracuse, we had a difficult time in the winter walking between buildings because there were certain places that were elevated on a hill. They were super concentrated wind tunnels, but my goodness, I mean, everyone lost power yesterday for like 20 hours. It's insane.
Yeah, it'll happen from time to time. We're pioneers. It takes a heartier stock to make it.
That's true.
In the Northwest. Let's hear that cut from Rodney Harrison again, because I think that this is part of the conversation about what happened with Russ and what Russ's natural skill set is. Russ is a tough quarterback to evaluate. And it's the reason that you'll hear widely divergent and why there have been people who have been ardent critics of Russell in spite of just indisputable positive results. Andy Benoit, who was for a long time sort of a tape analyst or a would-be scout at Sports Illustrated. Another guy's at Sean Fahey, who was with ESPN and did some of the stats, are two guys that think Russ is a bad quarterback. In spite of like sitting there looking at it, like Russ is a top 5 quarterback, and they're like, I don't even know if he's a league average quarterback. And the reason is because Russ plays different. Russ plays different. And if you were gonna grade him according to the standard of what you use to grade Matt Stafford, he's not gonna look great because he does choose to hold on to the ball a long time. You're also not gonna Matt Stafford is not gonna produce some of the great plays that Russell does because he holds on to the ball.
No doubt about it. Look, he's in a totally different conversation than the majority of quarterbacks. And we criticize Russ because we love him so much. I mean, he's the favorite child. He's one of the best that we've seen in the last 20 years. I would say he's in the top 10 of that conversation, maybe top 15 if you really want to get argumentative. This is a guy, though, that does have some bad habits. And when you see the bad habits, you get frustrated with them. And yes,
I don't know if it's bad habits. Here's Rodney Harrison talking about it.
You know why Russell Wilson is a problem? Because he needs discipline. He does whatever he wants. He drops back, and it's all, this is what their offense is about. Drop back, run around, and try to find someone deep. No. No, that doesn't work in the playoffs. That doesn't work all the time. Yeah, it can work, and you know, you can make a lot of big plays during the regular season, but when you come to the playoffs and you're trying to win a championship, that type of offense is not going to work. And you saw Seattle get exposed this last month.
I know it's somewhat of a simplistic way of looking at things, but the guy's been to three Super Bowls. He won two. And when I hear Rodney say that, I think about something, Danny, that I woke up to on Twitter this morning. I saw this CBS highlight reel of a playoff game in 2002 between the St. Louis Rams and the Green Bay Packers with Brett Favre under center. Brett Favre threw six interceptions in that game. And for those who want to know why I don't like Brett Favre, it's because of that game. And Brett Favre always was one of those freelancing guys. Is it not Russ? A guy who freelances, wheels and deals, extends plays?
He didn't throw six interceptions in a game. Like, that's not how I get what you're saying. I don't know if it's a bad habit, though, so much as something Russ does that requires trade-offs.
To me, where I'm going with Favre, it's not about the interceptions. It's about Favre has always been a freelancer. Favre is not someone who you're going to put a playbook in front of and say, this is how you do it. No, Favre is going to do it his own way. And that's what's great about him. And that's also what, for people like me, is so frustrating about him. And sometimes it's not going to work. And when it doesn't work, I mean, it can be disastrous. Was it disastrous for Russ? No, it wasn't. But I do think there's something to what Rodney was saying in that there has to be a little bit more of a plan than what seems like holding onto the football and looking for that big play downfield. And we see more of Russell Wilson than a guy like Rodney Harrison. But this is something that I have consistently heard talked about with Russell Wilson over the course of his career, that he is one of those guys that is going to essentially freelance and look for those big plays. It's a great part of his game, but it also can be a detriment against the wrong team. And the Rams, as we saw multiple times this season, are the exact wrong team to do this against.
I would agree with you. How do you counteract that? How do you counteract that? Because my answer to that is you counteract that by saying, okay, there is the possibility that Russ and his reliance on freelancing puts you in a... Give your offense something else to rely upon. Give your offense something else to rely upon, and that is building out a strong run game. And what we learned this year is that you don't build out a strong run game by neglecting it for eight games because you're so great at passing the ball. Build out the strong run game. I don't think the answer is to say Russ needs to play more on schedule. I don't think the answer is to say that Russ needs to start being more robotic about it. I think it's to find a substitute, because if you do that, you take away things like the 51-yard touchdown pass to DK Metcalf. You take that out of the game by asking him to color within the lines. I think that the answer is to let him to continue color outside the lines. Give yourself something else that you can depend upon.
You know that little kid in the taco commercial? Why not both? Why can't you do both? Why can't you have some of the freelancing and also have him being robotic at the same time? Because honestly, I think that unpredictable nature, in addition to what you're talking about, because I 100% agree with you, they have to be better with the running game next season. But can't you have some plays where the first read is for him to be robotic? And if that ain't there, then he can do all the things that he's so great at after the fact.
If you wanted him to do that, he'd never get to DK Metcalf on that 51-yard touchdown. If you're telling him to play within the system and do what Rodney Harrison is saying, he never gets to that play because he's throwing it away before that or he's dropping it off to a checkdown. You're taking the teeth out of what he does.
You know what? That's fair. But I mean, if you're 11-27 against a defense that is a great defense, but still, because you're looking deep and it's something that's happening over the second half of the year, a running game is going to help that out. But also the occasional quick play is going to help that out too, because teams are going to think to themselves, he can lull them to sleep, essentially, if he is working the intermediate and working the short more than he has been.
You're best leaving Russ with his stinger. You're best leaving Russ with his stinger and finding something else rather than saying Russ needs to play within a system more. That instead of saying that Russ needs to, because that is trying to put him into a box. And I guess that's why I would say is I don't think Russ... That works with a quarterback that you want to throw it 40 times a game, or you want him to do everything to counterpunch against the defense. I don't think Russ is that guy. I think he's at his best if you continue to allow him the freedom to be able to. That's one of the things they do best is the ad-libbing playground element of the play.
There's got to be a way where you can have the things that open up early and also have him have the ability to bail out and do those things at the end of the play, right? I mean, is there a way that they can do that? And maybe that's what Brian Schottenheimer failed at the most.
I don't know how you ask him to know in the spirit of the moment of, hey, I need to throw it away now because it's not going to work at the end of the play. There's not a switch. Yes, ideally it would work. And for eight games, it did work. And then what happened? Russ stopped seeing what was there. And Russ kept holding on to the ball. And they didn't have any sort of counterpunch. And if the result, if the way that people look at that is to say, okay, Russ needs to stop the freelancing part, I think you're taking away the biggest strength he has instead of finding a different way to go about it. I think you're best off trying to find a different way to provide something stable and repeatable for your offense. It is Danny and Gallant. Complaints or quibbles? There's a lot of different things, including the run defense or the tight ends, that will figure out exactly how serious was it? Was it a complaint? Was it a quibble? That's next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Got a text from the 206. My name is blank blank, and I will be here every January to remind you all how awful Russell is. Mark my words, he never sniffs another NFC championship game again. Playoffs is a new season. January 1st is a new season, a season in which Russ is proven to be awful. I texted him back that if I had that opinion, I definitely wouldn't be including my name on the text to brag about how smart I think I am.
Well, look, John is very bold with his takes. We won't say his last name, but John is bold. John has also been very anti-Bobby Wagner for months. So I respect the boldness
of the
takes.
Sounds like we got a hater. Sounds like we got a hater. That is giving off some very, very hating fumes.
I like John.
We're gonna pause. We're gonna pause from the back and forth over Russell Wilson and what his season was like to play complaint or quibble.
Ooh.
In which we quibble. Are going to view. Yeah, is it a quibble? Is it a quibble or is it a complaint? I think it's a legitimate, because there are things that you can point to that happened either in Saturday's game or in this season, and you wonder, like, how big a problem is it actually? Okay. Is it something that was an annoyance for a day, or is it a legit issue? Is it a quibble or is it a complaint?
A complaint means, yes, we are frustrated with this. It needs to be fixed. A quibble is, it's whiny, but it doesn't necessarily need to be fixed.
You can text in 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Something that might be bothering you that you would like to, and we will assess the severity, whether it's a quibble or a complaint.
Like,
we're going to start production at tight end. So the Seahawks tight ends, at the beginning of the season, what we said, hey, either Greg Olsen or Will Dissly has to be healthy the whole season. You don't necessarily expect both of them to finish the whole season, but they at least one of them needs to stay healthy. Olsen missed about a month. He came back. I'm not sure how at full strength he was. It was not impressive when he came back, but Dissly was there. They didn't get much production at tight end. Dissly had about the same in 16 games that he had in six games last season. I mean, he had four touchdowns last year in six games. He had two this year in 16 games. Olsen was 24 catches, but he only scored one touchdown. And I think if you honestly looked at it, I don't know. He was not worth this salary. And that doesn't mean that they shouldn't have signed him and taken him the chance on him, because I think there's a very low risk of investment there. But the production at tight end, given how healthy those two were, the overall health, it's disappointing what they got from tight end.
It's a legitimate complaint. I think with Dissly, the guy was coming off of a torn Achilles the year after, a torn ACL. So maybe to expect big time production out of him was misguided, but I think he did a solid job. It's not just Danny, and I think it's a legit complaint, the lack of production, because Greg Olsen was not the tight end that we thought the Seahawks were getting, given his production in Carolina the year before, a year where he finally was able to play the full season. You would think that you bring in tight ends like this, that all of a sudden you would also have better blocking for your running game. And they didn't even give you that. And ultimately, go to the last game of the season too. It did feel like at some point this year, Russell Wilson had developed some sort of rapport with Jacob Hollister when he actually was on the field. Hollister couldn't catch a pass in that game. I mean, drop after drop after drop. There was a time where I was like, wait, is that another tight end? Is the wealth of drops being spread around? No, Hollister was just dropping passes. And while there were a couple of plays where Russ had him open and he didn't throw to him, the tight end production as receivers this year was disappointing. We went into this year, Danny, did we not think this was one of the better tight end groups in the NFL?
Yes. And it kind of was, because you had three guys that caught 20 or more passes. But Jacob Hollister led this team's tight ends with receptions. Okay, so we'll say that that's a complaint. You expected a little bit more. What do you got?
The run defense got run the you-know-what over by the Rams. Run over. John Wolford's under center at first. Jared, I don't have a right thumb, Goff, was under center afterwards. A guy that, if you listen to the broadcast, does not sound like he's got any endorsement behind him from one Sean McVay. And Cam Akers, maybe he's going to be a good running back. I think he's got some skills. Ran all over you. We thought this run defense had improved. Brian Monet was banged up, I know, going into that game. And Jaren Reed actually was productive, but as a run defender. They got pushed around in that game. And honestly, I thought that was a thing of the past. I mean, is Sean McVay's running system that exotic?
I don't think it was, because it kind of seemed like they got smashed.
Yeah.
And certainly on the drive that resulted in the first half touchdown for the Rams, there's the 40-yard pass, which was, I don't want to say that wasn't just, hey, line it up and shove it down your throat, but how they stuck it in the end zone at the end of that drive was pretty dispiriting and humiliating. It was like right up the gut.
Right. And look, it's a one-game thing.
Was it a one-game thing?
It was a one-game thing.
It happened against the Giants. It happened against the Giants, too. And you're like, afterward, it was, hey, you know what? It was just a couple of bad plays in the same thing. But those two games played out the same way, right? In which it was a one-dimensional offense. You did not have to worry about the quarterback. And you never forced the quarterback to have to beat you in that situation. And that's almost worse, because you knew all you had to do was stop the run, and you still didn't stop the run.
The reason I believe this is a legit complaint, and I'm glad you brought up the Giants game, Danny, is because it's happening at the first level, but it's also happening at the second level. And, you know, I do not care what you guys think of me for this opinion. I don't think Bobby Wagner was worthy of that first-team All-Pro this year. I don't. And I think that you saw it, even though he had a lot of tackles in this game, and a lot of them early in the game against the Rams were close to the line of scrimmage. What is he doing to negate Wayne Gallman's and the Cam Akers of the world? KJ Wright, you're seeing it from him when he's out there. That's for sure. Like, there's a discrepancy, a clear discrepancy between who is more of an impactful player against the run when it comes to closing those holes and getting tackles close to the line of scrimmage. And I don't know. There's this moment in the game, and one of our good friends, Jackson Bevins, he wrote, like, Bobby Wagner was the best player on the field in that game. And I'm sorry, I just keep on thinking about that one play where Cam Akers has Bobby Wagner just flat-footed and then just breezes by him. That's a concern. The entire run defense, two games, is it the biggest problem for this team? No, but it's disappointing, certainly.
I don't know, man. The last two losses they suffered in this season both followed the exact same template on offense, which was a team that was limited at quarterback. The Giants have Colt McCoy. The Rams have John Wofford, and then Jared Goff, who's coming off of a thumb injury, so he can't consistently throw. I'm gonna put that as a complaint. I don't think it's just a quibble or a bad game. Like, you saw the same thing repeated in both of the last two games they lost. From the 602, quibble or complaint? Russ's lack of clock management.
Oh, that's
is it, Russ?
Is
it Russ?
That's everyone.
No, but we need to figure out who's. Russ isn't immune here, because there are times where I'm like, you got to get out of the huddle quicker. Like, you got to get guys going. Like, that needs to be, that's the quarterback, right? You get to yell at everybody. You're like the soccer goalie. You're the one player that's allowed to scream at people without us thinking you're a bad teammate. Like, you need to get guys going out of the huddle.
You know, I don't know how many of you guys know Southerners. You have Southern friends. Southerners are not.
It doesn't have to be a regional insult.
It is. It
doesn't have to be regional insult.
Southerners are always late. And you know what? Having lived in the South for a little bit, I became a part of that. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't know I needed to be here 15 minutes ahead of time.
Like, this has nothing to do with the regional differences in
America. You know what? Whatever, Danny. Like, this, it's as if they are Southerners. It drives me crazy. Be on time. Like, do we need to bring in Tom Coughlin just to find everybody? Oh, nope. You got to put a dollar in your late jar. Like, my God. Honestly, let's hire Tom Coughlin. To be the hardo that reminds them to be on time.
I believe that's Pete's rule number one, or maybe rule number one is it's all about the ball. Rule number one is protect the team. But I think rule number three is be on time. It's a sign of respect. It might even be if you're not early, you're late. So being on time is a big part of Pete's approach. and they still are not on time. I would agree. It's not a quibble. It's a complaint. I don't know if it's a redeemable character flaw, though. I think that I kind of have just accepted that about this friend, that they're always going to be late, and I'll give them a hard time about it, but I don't ever really expect it to change.
And I'm a bit of a hypocrite for calling him out because I'm late all the time, but be on time. Come on, guys. Come on. This is a football game. I don't want to get back into the fourth and one.
Everybody's got a friend that's always late, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most unique friend that I ever had in this way was Brian Gordon, who was creatively nicknamed Gordo. And he would show up late, but he had the most unique strategy for dealing with it, is that he would show up late and he would be mad at you. Like he would walk in like 20 minutes late and he would be mad at you to try and like emphasize like how beyond his control his lateness was. Like he was just furious. You're like, wait a minute. Like you don't get to be mad because you were late. You were late. We should be mad at you. And instead, he used, I don't know whether it was some sort of psychological warfare, but it was the most unique and effective strategy I've ever seen a person who is chronically late employ.
Good for him. I just don't it. I am. This is what happens when you lived in Florida for a little bit. The South just seeps into you.
It is Danny and Gallant coming up next. Of all the different talk about Russell Wilson and what might have happened, there's one person that thinks that what just transpired might actually be part of the problem that leads to his departure. What? We'll hear that next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We're all a little shook by what we saw from Russell Wilson in the season-ending playoff loss. DJ's laughing at that. I'm sorry, guys, that I'm so hip. I can work in a little music into my piping hot sports takes. Lots of people, Danny, have been weighing in on what has gone on with Russell Wilson. And maybe
what's wrong with Russ?
Oh, my goodness. The sky is falling. Is Russell Wilson even a good quarterback anymore? I don't think people have gone that far. But a lot of people are pointing at Russ. And now that Brian Schottenheimer is out of the way, I understand why. It's open season on him, the national talking heads. Before they get into talking about this weekend's playoff games, they're going to talk about what happened to Seattle. The biggest disappointment, I think, of this past weekend in the playoffs. Mike Florio had an interesting take about Russell Wilson and specifically how it relates to his future in Seattle.
This is why I feel like it's heading in a bad way. What I was told early in the year when we were talking about let Russ cook, it was let Russ cook or he's going to find a new kitchen. Well, they let him cook. It didn't work. And now I feel like what Pete Carroll is saying is the hell with this. We're going to do it my way. And that's going to set the stage for a potential showdown with Russell Wilson. And again, folks, we're just trying to get you ahead of the curve here as to where the ball is moving. And it may be moving in a direction of Wilson moving out of Seattle.
Danny, I know that you have a great deal of respect for Mike Florio takes.
It's hard to carry an agent's water like that. That's tough work. Like to sit there and transparently and to say to in spite of the observable reality of like this year it was let Russ cook, and the result of that is that you had a 12-4 season that was successful, but the most disappointing playoff loss, I think, in Pete Carroll's tenure here. And then to say, well, if they're going to change anything, Russell's going to leave. Look, if you want to, there is. The idea that he's promoting there is that you have to worship at the altar of Russell Wilson, and that anything he does well, he is praised for. And in fact, the coaches are criticized for not letting him do that sooner. And the moment anything goes wrong, it's because he's getting bad coaching. That's just so simplistic and just, it's dumb, right? Like, does anybody really believe that? This is part of being a franchise quarterback. It's you get a massive amount of credit when it goes well and people talk about you as the MVP, and we spent the entire first eight games. And when it doesn't go well, you sit there and look at it because the quarterback has more of a say in the outcome than anything else. And if I do not think that Russell is some fragile little flower that if he doesn't get everything exactly the way he wants, that he's going to shrivel up and wither or want to be moved.
Mm-hmm.
And if after this season, an attempt to recalibrate the offense does lead him to want to leave, I think that that's immature and that's silly. I don't think Russell is that small. I think that people will say and try to, for the benefit of themselves, diminish any fault or flaw that Russell has and say, well, if they don't appreciate what they have, he's just going to leave. I don't have much patience for it.
There's a lot of that goes on across the league, Danny. I mean, right now it's as if Deshaun Watson is the subject of those ASPCA ads.
Arms of the but angel. You understand because they're
not a good team.
They're a terrible record.
It makes a lot more sense.
They trade DeAndre Hopkins for a running back who can't stay. I mean, that I get that beef. I do not get what beef Russell Wilson could, and I don't think he has with the Seahawks.
But locally, don't you hear this a lot? Like, oh, I mean, the entire Let Russ Cook movement was born out of this idea that Pete is holding Russ back. And if you want to extrapolate from that, that leads you down a path of, could there be conflict between these two down the road?
There could be. And I think that that would depend on two things. First of all, this would have to be the wrong decision, right? Like, this would have to, the idea that starting to run the ball more is going to lead Seattle to be 8-8 and not make the playoffs and not be a significant contender. That would be the first thing. That the move that they make now makes the team observably worse. And then the second part would have to be that Russ really was, that whatever happened this season wasn't the result of things kind of becoming overloaded on Russell Wilson's plate. That Russ really wasn't, it was a bad offensive coordinator. It was the coach that was putting too much restrictions on the offense, that he really was. The reason that the offense slowed down in the second half wasn't because Russ stopped playing as well. It was because of what the coaches were doing, whether it was the head coach wanting to avoid turnovers or the offensive coordinator putting him in the right position. I don't think that's an accurate assessment of what happened. I think Russ, for all of his strengths, is in a better situation when he is complemented by a strong run game. And I think that he needs a strong run game more than a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, because he's a different kind of quarterback than Patrick Mahomes.
I am with you there. Is he self-aware enough to be with that line of thinking? That is, I think, something that will consistently be asked about the best athletes in sports. Are they aware of their own limitations? Are they people who look at their struggles and point at themselves, or do they point at others? And inwardly, we're never going to know with Russell Wilson because of just how polished he is on the surface. But is there a possibility that he points? That's what Florio's pointing towards.
Yes.
That there will,
I think,
ultimately,
it's the people around Russ more than it's Russ.
Oh.
I think it's the people around Russ more than it's Russ.
Honestly,
that's what I think it is. And I think that it's people who want to either curry favor or want to just repeat the talking points that they've been given about how he's underappreciated. I do not believe that Russell is underappreciated.
He's definitely not after this past season. You can't make that argument ever again.
Or over-scrutinized in this market or by people there. And if that's the way people feel, it's because they don't want any criticism of him. I think Seattle is fortunate to have Russell Wilson.
Same.
I think Russell Wilson is the best quarterback that this franchise has had,
same,
possibly will ever have.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that this season showed, I don't even want to say the limitations. It shows that if you try to take the approach of letting Russ cook, that things get so loaded on him to do everything, and that causes the offense to bog down. And the solution to it isn't to do that process better, make sure they don't have the turnovers in the middle of the year. It's to build out a run game.
The fear of balance that some have, and I would say informed, smart people have.
Yes. Yeah. I had this opinion at the beginning of the season. Not that I'm informed or smart. I don't think it's a crazy thought that, hey, he would be better off being able to throw more.
The resistance to the running of the football going forward, to me, after the struggles of late, I don't get it. I mean, and I don't think that there's a lot of people listening right now that are even still thinking, oh, well, no, it's just, you know, Russ is just completely, he's essentially MacGyver out there. No, no one thinks that he's operating with a toothpick, a paperclip, and a piece of gum. And yet, there are some who are like, oh, you gotta run more? It's 2021, not 1812.
Another bad year to be referencing, Paul. All of the little subtle political references that you've had.
Oh,
all
yeah.
of the little things. I've heard more about the War of 1812 in the past week than I have in all of the years since the War of 1812. That might not have been funny.
Well, it kind of worked. It kind of worked there. It's Danny Gallant. He's Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. In the War of 1812, was the British's fault?
No, we're going to talk about Russell Wilson. We're going to talk about Russell Wilson and explain why Pete Carroll should draw the lesson this past season of, yeah, we're not doing that again. That's ahead.